Hey guys, what's going on? It's Josh, JCL Felto for The Writer's Lens, and this is episode 30, which is titled, For Every Creative, The Stakes Are Unbelievably High. And this is an episode that I feel like is a bit of a landmark episode since it's episode 30. I honestly, when I started this podcast, I didn't really have a plan in mind as far as how far I'd go with it, but 30 episodes seems like a lot, honestly, as far as having enough material to just keep moving forward along with every other interview and review that I've done on this podcast. So I appreciate you guys sticking through with this and just joining me alongside this publishing journey, this creative journey that I've been on. And hopefully you found things to be interesting, entertaining, intriguing, and maybe even semi-educational. Or perhaps I make you feel better about your life considering I got all these passion projects that just are just on the burner. They're still struggling to get out of me. But on that note, I wanted to do an episode just that's like this because I've been feeling a little more, I don't want to say I've been feeling more pressure lately to finish what I've started because I've kind of left that mindset behind me for a while now. But just to kind of come almost full circle on the process of what it's felt like to pursue a passion, you know, what it's felt like to pursue something like writing and how that's kind of shaped a lot of my decisions over the course of time. So that's pretty much what this episode's going to be about. And for starters, just to kind of go back to the beginning almost, when you have a gift or a talent, and it's, let's say it's in the arts, or even if it's something physical, like running or whatever it may be, when you have something that's better than mediocre, people will recognize that about you. They'll say something to you because people just have a habit of that. We tend to identify the ones that are better than just the rest of the crowd, all right? I mean, and I could go down the rabbit hole of conversations about kids getting trophies, but I don't want to go down that route right now. But as far as having a talent or a gifting, I mean, as a kid, I recall writing essays or writing short stories for elementary school or junior high assignments, and I could do them so quickly. And it was just easy for me. It was easy to structure stories and easy to structure words together. And it was really cool getting praised for it. I mean, I'll just be honest. I mean, it's cool when someone tells you, hey, you're really good at this. Hey, if you really put some effort behind this, I mean, you could do something with this. And that kind of kickstarts or lights the fire, hopefully, in a person to go, well, what does this mean to me, right? Like, what does this mean to me that I'm good at it? And for me, it was writing. I mean, granted, I had other things I was good at, but in the classroom, at least, writing and reading were two things I was usually ahead above everybody else. So that was cool. But the other thing that was interesting is that I was interested in it. Like I was not only good at it, but I was interested in it. And that should really kind of set the light bulb above your head on, because when you have an interest that matches a talent or a gift that you have, it's almost like an itch that you just have to scratch. Like, what do I do with this? And so many questions I feel like start bubbling up in your mind, especially when you're younger. Like, what does all this mean to me? And what does this mean to other people? Because you then have to decide what you're going to do with it. And, there's old quotes and cliches that say things like, well, one of the greatest tragedies in life is wasted talent. Yeah, that's true. But there's also talent that never gets realized because the person just isn't interested. Okay, they're just not interested in using their talent. So that's a whole other thing in and of itself. But as I got older, just telling my story about how I got into writing. But as I got older, I had to decide what I was going to do with this writing interest of mine and this kind of passion I had for telling stories, fictional ones even, which is a whole other thing of itself. But mostly what other people will tell you is you can make money off this. You can make some money off of your gift, off of your talent. And if that is the case, that you eventually come around to that thinking that, yes, I want to make some money off my gift, then sure, you can start to go down that road. Or if you just think of it as an escape. I mean, I have a family member that is insanely good at painting and artwork, and he wants nothing to do with selling it. And I've asked him several times, I go, why don't you put this on like Etsy or something, or Pinterest or Instagram, and just see what happens. You know, anything that you do. And everything he does is original. It's not like he sits down and he pens out the Empire State Building that's on the backdrop of his screensaver. No, he's doing like these kind of original pictures of waterfalls and sceneries that are really cool. And I just said, man, you know, you got to do something with this. And he goes, no. He goes, because then it will become a job. And I don't want it to be a job. I want it to be my hobby and my escape. And again, that's totally cool. And I've blessed him with that, even though a lot of times I've tried to twist his arm and say, dude, man, you're sitting on a gold mine here. but that's fine. I mean, that's fine as using it as an escape or a hobby or it's an interest. But if you are in the former mindset that I was talking about of, you know, how could I use this gift that I have to maybe support myself financially and share it with other people, then you have a really interesting situation on your hands, because now you have to get more serious about it. Obviously, you may have been really good at it. You may have been really naturally good at it, but now you have to get a little more serious. And that leads me into, you know, kind of where my story went after school was over, after college was over. And once I had the quote unquote big boy job, and I realized that my interest and my passion was just not being cultivated. I wasn't watering the grass where I should have been, so to speak. And that really hurt me. And I knew that I had to make some changes in some way to start gravitating towards giving myself more time to work on that original interest that I had when I was younger. But assuming that you're the type of person that decides they're going to try and make something of this gift or this talent that you've recognized as being both something that you're better than average at, and other people recognize it within you, and you have this interest in it. So what do? You go out there and you try to find out who else is doing the same thing. I mean, that was one of the things that I did when I was first self-publishing, is I went out into different spheres of publishers and people who were editing things and trying to write their own stories. And I'm bumping into people at book signings. I'm bumping into people at book fairs. I'm talking to people about their own, you know, writing interests and poetry. And man, it was a little bit daunting, to be completely honest. I mean, even in this small sector of United States in Northeast Ohio. And that was pretty intimidating. You like to think that you're unique and that, yeah, I'm the only person in this building that wants to write a book. And it's like, no, everybody in that room wants to write a book. Everybody wants to write a book. At some point, it seems. And if you tell them that you want to write a book, man, they will tell you about their book idea pretty quickly. So regardless of just that piece of it, I knew I had to just start jumping in and figure out what was I going to do with this writing thing. I just, you know, I started dipping my toes in the water, and I ended up getting about 6 feet under the water after seeing all the possibilities that were out there. Traditional publishing houses, sending query letters to publishers, to agents. You know, sometimes I could go straight to a publisher rather than go through an agent. I could self-publish my books. I could get an editor first. I could get an illustrator. I could get somebody who does proofreading. I could try and create a community of writers around me that would help figure out if my ideas are crap or not. I mean, so many options. And quite frankly, so many people willing to do it. I mean, it just, that was so, like I said, intimidating. When I first started doing the writing thing, and I honestly think I remember just kind of backing out a bit, just kind of backing away from the whole thing and going, all right, I need some space to breathe before I start writing books. I just, this world that I'm entering into, I don't know if I'm ready for it, which was also a little bit disorienting because I thought that I had everything ready to go. Like, I was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to jump into the creative pool of writing, and I'm just going to take to it like a duck on water. And it was like, no, you're like a duck that's bobbing in water and drowning because you don't know what you're doing at all. You have this passion for writing, but you have no clue what to do beyond that. So, like I said, that was a little bit intimidating for me and daunting in the beginning stages. But once I actually wrote a book, and I got out of the woods, and I could kind of rise up out of not the ashes, because I hadn't crashed and burned yet, but once I rose out of that valley, and I was sitting on my mountaintop, I'd written my first book, and I'm looking around, and I'm going, man, I finally did it, right? Like, I'm out of the weeds. I can breathe air again. And once I got there, it was like, man, it's even more crowded up here. It's even more crowded on the space where people have finished their books and finished their projects. I mean, whoa. I remember, I think the statistic was like in 2008, had more books that were self-published than traditionally published for the first time ever. And I self-published my book. I'd sell, if you didn't know that by now, rewind on all my episodes and go back to like episode one and then just, you know, just binge all the way till now. You won't regret it. You won't regret it. Right. But I self-published this book, and as soon as I got out in the market space, it was like, oh my gosh, I thought I had it bad when I was kind of competing just to finish a project with other people. It's like a lot of people have finished their passion projects, and whoa, it's even more cluttered out here. There's even more people out here now. This is crazy. And with that, so many people that were out there just had so many different tools and methods that they were using to get their book out. I mean, some people had vans with, you know, logos on them wherever they went. They were like plumbers, and they had vans that they could go places. And and there were just bookmarks and book covers they were giving away for free, and pens and pencils and just all kinds of memorabilia, keychains and business cards. And here I was with just like my book, like a 6x9 cover. You know, I had one guy help me illustrate it. I had like one other person edit it with me. And man, I felt like somebody on the junior high football team who had suddenly been thrown onto the varsity team for who knows what reason. Maybe because I put on a jersey by accident and I found myself on the sidelines. I had no idea what I was in for. And I think it was then that my delusions of grandeur, which was my huge expectation of, yeah, I'm going to kill this thing because it's easy for me and I'm interested in it, so obviously I'm going to do well. Obviously I'm going to destroy the competition once I get to the top. No. Okay, that was like a big, fat no. Like, that's not going to happen. You got more work to do than you even realized. And the biggest thing that actually was even more insane once I got to the top was the work I had to do now was even bigger than what I'd done previously, which was, you know, taking the leap, you know, running through the weeds, getting all that stuff done, getting to the top of the mountain when my book was done. What was even bigger now was figuring out, is this actually the purpose of my interest? Am I using my interest, my passion, my entrepreneurial spirit for the right reasons? Am I doing what I'm meant for? That was a big gut check for me, because I really feel like, and I think this is just universal, and that's why I want to share it, is that I really feel like so many times we get in a vacuum where we get so narrowed in our approach to reaching a goal that we often don't stop and think, well, why am I doing this? You know, what's the spirit behind what I'm trying to accomplish? And I honestly was not doing that in my first couple books that I was doing, because it was really just about get it out. And I've mentioned this in other episodes, but it just needs to be repeated for my own sake. Is it was all about self-glory. It was all about myself patting myself on the back, trying to show the world that I'd done something. And that was very, very humbling for me to realize that I really wasn't using what I had to help. I don't want to say help others is the right way of putting it, but doing what I was meant to do, what God had called me in to do. And that was a, like I said, a big wake up call. And I kind of had to change my whole approach on what I was going to do when it came to publishing books and the things that I wanted to write about, because I was heading down a path of extreme satire, humor, you know, probably a little dash of narcissism in there. And that's not really who I wanted to be. I should say, that's not who God wanted me to be. And I really had to humble myself in that moment and just go, okay, if you don't want me to do this, but but I have this interest, I have this passion for writing. What do you want me to do instead? And I got a pretty quick answer, and hence the inspirational fiction, the science fiction now that I dive into. That's more my calling. And it's opened up more doors for me than it did, you know, with the previous venture. I mean, the previous venture was like, okay, I'm done. That mountain I've climbed, now I got to go back into the weeds again. Well, now it's like I finish a book, I'm up there, and I can see other people going, hey, you. You know, you know, if as I continue this metaphor of peaks and valleys of creative process, just I find that to be the best way to explain it. So that helps me be reaffirmed that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. But on that note, and just because you're doing what you're supposed to be doing doesn't mean that you're going to be radically successful right away. Because as I would say in terms of my own understanding of how God works in one's life, he's not as interested as much in like you taking the mantle and being uber successful. He's more interested in figuring out ways to transform you through the process, figuring out what are some areas you still have to refine in yourself. What are some things that you're trying to do to help someone else? Because it's not all about you. You know, it's not just all about me. It's about anyone else that I encounter creatively, professionally, whatever that may be. So that also has been pretty humbling as well, just trying to figure out, you know, who is it that I'm supposed to help, or whose life am I supposed to be helping impact as I go through this passion of mine. And like I said, that leaves the stakes unbelievably high because of the nature of creativity and just writing in general. Because I heard this amazing example recently about how when it comes to being a creative that's fighting in a certain space, it's like all or nothing for someone. And I'll leave this episode at this, is that if you think about a 100-meter dash, and this was I've heard this example a couple times, but I just want to mention it because I think it's so good. 100-meter dash at the Olympics. I remember the name Usain Bolt because he won the gold medal. I only know who the silver medalist is because he was the guy who was like the doper, Justin Gatlin, at the Rio Olympics in 2016. I know I'm taking some people back a couple years, but I only know him because he's from the U.S. and there was this huge rivalry with him and Usain Bolt. But if I had to recall who got third, who got fourth, who got fifth, who got sixth, who finished first in one of the qualifying heats, I have no idea. And I'm pretty sure that most people, unless they were family members of that person, if they were friends of that person, if they were a person from that country that would perhaps know who that person was, and even then that's probably stretching it, they may not have a clue who that person was because they didn't win, because they weren't at the front of the finish line. And that, again, can be an intimidating and daunting thing to a creative person, to any entrepreneur, really. Because if you know that the finish line is more than just you getting there, you actually have to beat everybody else, that can be a really kind of paralyzing thing to kind of come to grips with. And it's a lot of the reason why I just, not that I want it to be a self-fulfilling prophecy, but one of the things that I myself have to really watch and go, okay, am I doing what I'm doing for me? Because if I'm doing what I'm doing for me, it's a lonely race. It's not a fun one. And even if I do achieve some bit of glory, if you will, I'm really not winning the race that matters most. So I'll leave you guys with that. So again, my landmark episode 30 of the stakes being high for creatives. And I really appreciate everybody's support, everyone who's been checking this out, this creative podcast. I'm hoping to have some more interviews here in the coming weeks. But again, I'll have some more content coming out weekly here on this creative podcast. So again, guys, really enjoy tuning in, checking it out, and I'll be with you again soon.